Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of Family Business Radio. You can find us every Thursday here from 1 to 2, and I am one of your hosts, Pat Rombaletti from Sage Executive Search, and my co-host?
I am Meredith Moore with Moore & Associates Wealth Management.
Hey, Meredith, how are you doing besides not having much of a voice today?
Well, I can make a lot of old lady with emphysema jokes, but I'm going to try to resist too much today.
Well, whenever you hear somebody kind of whispering in the background, that will be Meredith. So
that's me.
Yeah. So, Meredith, tell us a little bit about what do you think we have in store today for our guests?
I am really excited because I'm actually having a good friend of mine, Rick Bailey, and his daughter, Amanda Hohenberry, coming on to speak. They own a health insurance agency, and I've sent a number of clients to them, so I know what they have to say in terms of in their character. It's very high quality. And I think what we're going to really try to explore today is what it's like going from a sole proprietorship to really having your daughters come into the business and transition to this family-owned business element and really kind of discuss and delve into that. We're going to see what advantage it really can be when you have several different generations coming to the table and seeing what different things they might be able to bring.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it as well. It'll be a lot of good information for our listeners. And let's start out. Rick, I'd like to introduce you. I know that you formed the agency in 1978. It wasn't called Rick Bailey & Company then. It was Rick Bailey & Associates. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and then how that agency has started and evolved?
Great, Pat. I would be glad to. Started back in 1978, licensed agent. And then over time, I saw the need for education, more education, and so I started getting professional designations. I got the Certified Financial Planner designation in 1982, one of the first 3,500 people in the country to achieve that. Later years, I also received the Registered Health Underwriter, Registered Employee Benefit Consultant, and then the Certified Senior Advisor. So those are the professional designations. Over the years, I've gotten real involved in the Health Underwriter Association. I was president of the Atlanta Association. At that time, it was the largest health insurance agent chapter in the country with over 550 agents. I later became president of the Georgia Associations of Health Underwriters, the state association. We won national awards in both those roles. In 2006, I was given the National Distinguished Service Award, one of six people in the country to receive that award that year. And then in 2009, I received the Georgia Health Underwriter of the Year Award.
Excellent. Sounds like you have kept abreast of all of the changes, which in this day and age is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, I have trouble saying no.
That's good. Well, do you do just individual health? Tell us a little bit about the lines of insurance that you represent.
Right. Our company specializes in individual and group health insurance. Mm-hmm. That's our strength. We do some other types of insurance, but again, that is probably 90% of what we do.
Okay.
And then I started in 1978 part-time selling life insurance around the kitchen table.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of an interesting story. I had a good friend. I went there and talked about some life insurance. He had a young family. And the insurance premium, I can't remember what it was now, but whatever it was, he said that he could not afford the premium because he needed to buy his baby some shoes. So 2 weeks later, I go by his house, and I see them putting an in-ground swimming pool in.
Wow.
So that was kind of the start of the career.
Mm.
Then in 1984, I was doing insurance part-time those years. 1984, I left my full-time job, started the business, borrowed money to eat the first 6 months. Mm. So that was kind of the start. It's kind of interesting.
Mm.
And in doing that, thinking through this, really it was my family that helped start this business. My in-laws, James and Sue Cannon, gave me an office, a desk, and a chair to get started. My sister, Sue Smallwood, gave me a couch and a love seat and a table to put in the office. Later on, when fax machines became such an important item, they were $800 back in those days. And she said, well, I'll get you a fax machine. You need that. So my mother and dad, Jack and May Bailey, helped us. We ate there. If we ate there one time a week, we may have eaten there five times a week. So they helped us. And then my biggest fan is my wife, Linda, and she did not know we could not fail. I mean, she did not know we could fail.
Mm.
So that's the reason we didn't fail.
When
I started, there were three goals that I had. One was to help people. The second was to earn a living for my family. And the third was to earn the respect of my peers. So every day, that was the three goals I had. In the first 2 months in business, I didn't make a sale. So I was getting a little nervous. So I got on the phone, and I was calling out of the phone book. Mm-hmm. And I called a successful businessman there in Canton and called him at 7:15 in the morning because I didn't know that business owners answered the phone at 7:15. The secretaries come in at 8. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, to him, I said, well, you probably don't know who I am. And he said, yeah, I know who you are. And I said, well, you're probably happy with your health insurance. That's what I'm doing now. And he said, you know, I'm not. Come see me at 9 o'clock and let's do something. So he's a client still today.
Oh, wow.
One of my best clients. And we started the business in 84. For about 10 years until 94, I did that on solo practice, just myself. And then in 94, my daughter Delaine came in on a part-time basis. And so looking back today, I'm not sure exactly how I did this. Just by the grace of God, am I here with you today?
Wow. Mm-hmm. What a great start. And Amanda, tell us a little bit about your background and particularly the path that you originally took and now how you, at what point you circled back and ended up with your dad in the business.
Well, my bio is not nearly as decorated as my father's. Talk about a tough act to follow. I should have gone first. My name is Amanda Hohenberry, and I am the oldest Bailey daughter, although I prefer to be called the wisest. I'm still trying to get my sisters to catch on to that. I'm a graduate of Sequoia High School, Reinhardt College, and Kennesaw State University. I earned a degree in psychology and wanted to pursue that avenue originally. Did not work for the family business while I was in school. I sold jewelry. So I had a background in sales and a degree in psychology. Had a little limited experience in social work. Was trying to figure out the next step, considering going back to getting my master's degree. And Dad said, well, in the interim of trying to decide what you're going to do with the rest of your life, would you like to come work for me? Just a couple of months even, just, you know, to decide what you want to do. And I remember saying, well, Dad, Delaine's already working for you. How can we afford this? And Dad said, I don't know. Let's figure it out, you know. So we did. And I went to work for Dad in 1998. I earned my insurance agent's license in 1999. Been working for Dad full-time since then. And currently I serve as the media chair for the Atlanta Association of Health Underwriters.
Wow. So kind of pretty much never looked back once you made that segue into there.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Now, Rick, did you intend when you said, hey, Amanda, come work with me for 2 months, was that was your intent in the end to get her on full time, or how did that play out?
Honestly, it was the 2 months. I mean, I'm a big believer in them doing what they want to do. And if you do what you enjoy, you'll be successful, whatever that is. So the 2 month offer was the 2 month offer, and then you decide.
Wow. So now at that point, Delaine was in the business, and then Amanda, and then there's a third daughter that shows up somewhere along the line. When did that happen, and how did that happen?
Well, Jennifer is 8 years younger than me and 6 years younger than Delaine, and she earned an education degree and was going to go into teaching. And at that point, you know, 8 years down the line, our business was in a different financial position. We didn't have, when Delaine and I came in, it was more like, let's figure out a way to make it work, and we kind of created our own position there. We had to find a way to earn our income. With Jennifer, we were in a position to be able to offer her an income out of school, and I remember the day that Jennifer stopped by the office, and she and Dad had a real heartfelt conversation about, we have an open-door policy here. We'd love for you to join us. You know, you have all the skills to be a great asset to this company if you would like to, but your dream is the most important thing, so You follow your dream, and we'll be here for you either way. And Jennifer considered it and said, "Hey, I'd like to come to Rick Bailey and Company." So then we were all reunited again.
Hey, Rick, you need another daughter.
Well, that's why we don't have any more employees. He ran out of kids.
Right.
We're looking into adoption currently because we need to expand.
What a great story. So it sort of morphed. It was a very organic beginning. But once everyone was in there, did you step back and say, well, what are the expectations? I know you're talking about people being happy. Was that part of the process as well?
It was some. My personal expectations were to bring them along as slowly or as fastly as they wanted to come. Mm-hmm. And to start off from a process of actually learning the business through the service side. And so we started out where, you know, I would say, you know, call and ask these questions. This is why. And then once they would come back, we need to do something else. Well, you should have thought about asking this one. They go back. So then I would deliver that information to the client. And then over time, it kind of moved to where they were delivering the information, and then now they have the client relationships, and sometimes I don't. And we have a kind of an interesting story. One of our best clients a few years ago, in the health insurance business, people get calls from agents weekly about, let us quote your business. And she was telling me this guy kept calling, and he said, well, your agent is going to retire. Let me have a chance when he retires. And she said, well, when he retires, his daughters will take over, and we're going to continue to do business with them.
That's great. So the clients have trained in succession planning with you as well.
Exactly.
And then how did you, and that is a question, so for a long time they had just you, Rick, and now you brought your daughters in, and they were kind of in the background. How did you kind of introduce and assimilate them into the client contact, and how did that work?
It's kind of interesting. Our clients are our friends, and our friends are our clients. Mm-hmm. And so, in a way, they're an extension of our family. And so we went through the process of them talking with Amanda, Delaine, and Jennifer. And through that process of Amanda, Delaine, and Jennifer helping them, they then built those relationships over time. It wasn't something that we did in a few weeks, a few months. It's taken a few years.
How did that? Were you guys running joint meetings, basically, to transition some of those relationships, or...?
A lot of that, and also a lot of return phone calls or giving answers to questions. Sometimes questions will be relayed to Dad, say, at an enrollment meeting. And then Delaine or I might split that research, and then we might go back to the HR director and say, here's some of the answers that you asked for, and develop the relationship that way. Our transition plan is not an overnight transition of power. We're looking at a 20-year span of slowly transitioning us in the business and Dad out. So it's a very natural, slow process. And I think because of that, the reception is not this new person's being forced upon me, but more a gradual trust of this is one more person that I can go to get help. And I think that's why it kind of works. From my perspective, from the second generation perspective, the only fear that I had with talking about expectations, the fear that I had was that the clients would look at me, Delaine, or Jennifer and say, well, they have their job because of good old-fashioned nepotism, someone with my same education, experience, degree, credentials, might not. I just wanted to make sure we were well-received. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of pressure, and I felt like I set the bar high for myself because I didn't want to let Dad down. The flip side of that pressure is that someone in my position that has been raised within a business, and that business took care of me, the man that took care of me started this business. Who cares more about that business than I do? Mm-hmm. So, yes, the bar has been set higher, maybe from clients, maybe from myself, but either way, I'm going to work to meet that.
So it's kind of that traditional, often children going into family do feel like they have something a little bit more to prove.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there was a, with how the clients were receiving you, that... I guess I know because I'm not exactly over 50 myself, but dealing with client relationships that were already there, were you still perceived as the daughter of Rick? And from an age standpoint, dealing with some of the ageism, if you will, and being a young woman as well?
A little bit, yes. I feel like, and again, 10 years ago more so than now, I remember there being a time when it was kind of my aha moment that I was transitioning mentally within the business. And that was when I would call clients back, and instead of saying, this is Amanda at Rick Bailey's office, I would say, this is Amanda with Rick Bailey and Company. I was becoming my own person within that company and not just a representative of my father. So I feel like that, I feel like there was a little bit of that kind of thing going on.
Transition.
Yeah, a little bit of that.
We introduced this program to talk in our website about talking about multi-generations. And I know that when all of us chatted prior to the show, that came up a lot. So I'd love to touch on that topic a little bit because I know that you haven't just it hasn't been a casual thing. It sounds like over time you've kind of sat down, realized a little bit about the multi-generations, and that's helped your business evolve differently. Can you share a little bit about what you shared with us?
Yes. One of the things is you have a natural sphere of influence that's 10 years above and 10 years below your age. So as I move down the age continuum, I'm 55 now, then 45 to 65-year-old people are my natural market. Mm-hmm. As I move to 65, my natural market is pretty much retired. Mm-hmm. So I saw the need to transition the daughters more involved actively with those clients. And so that's kind of the process that started us. We need to be doing more of this.
And Amanda, so you've come in and you're, you know, the way I saw it was there's the boomers, there's Gen X, which is yourself, and then your sister, Gen Y.
Right.
So first of all, you probably come in with a different perspective just to start with. And then I know you've had some more formal discussions and meetings that have made that bringing out the strength of each. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes. You know, a lot of times you think about families being so similar. And although the core of us is, you know, the integrity that we bring to the business and the way that we want to take care of people, that is the same. That's very homogeneous between all of us. But the skill sets that we bring to the table to accomplish that task is completely different. And that's as much generational as it is just individual personality. I feel that, you know, Delaine with her, and if you look at our degrees, I think that really spells out the people that we are. Because Delaine with her financial background, she's a numbers person, she's organized, she's detail-oriented, she's type A. Things are going to be done the first time when Delaine does them. And she also has just a heart of gold. She does a lot of charity work. So when you combine those two skill sets together, there is the client that loves to work with Delaine because everything's done just that way. With Jennifer, she has a degree in education. Innately, she is a teacher. She's an educator. So 5 minutes with Jennifer and a client knows more about insurance than they knew the first 50 years of their life. That develops a comfortable zone for the client. They feel comfortable asking questions, getting answers that they understand. It's not over their head. And Jennifer gets tons of referrals. I mean, working the shortest amount of time of the four of us, she gets as many referrals as any of us, or if not more.
probably 20 years from now, they'll write a book about Jennifer.
raw talent. And then me having the psychology background, I'm more of a face-to-face people, let's talk it out, let's use the oral and written word. So my strength is more face-to-face sales, and not as much the organizational part of the business or the management part of the business. Dad is everything else. I mean, if you can't find another agent in Georgia with his experience, designations, awards, the respect of his clients, the admiration of his industry peers. If you put those four people together, you cannot fail. The only way you can fail is if you don't use the strengths of those four people. If you fail to recognize what each of those people can bring to the business, that's the only way it doesn't work.
Now, Rick, are you the rainmaker for the agency, basically?
At this point, I am, but we're starting the process to transition that part of it, too.
And how's that working, or does that fall to Amanda, or talk to us a little bit about that?
Really, Amanda, Delaine, and Jennifer each have their strengths. So certain clients will be attracted to each one. So my thought is that we do it in a three-pronged approach where each one goes out, and you know, like for Jennifer, for example, with the technology, she'll go out and attract those type of clients, and we want her to do that. Delaine, there's a certain client, a CFO-type client, is naturally attracted to Delaine because they think alike. And Amanda, from the sales perspective, you know, the chief marketing officer, the entrepreneur, those people are going to be more attracted to working with her. So the thought is that over the next 5 years, we'll transition all three into doing that.
So all the Bailey girls are out in the field trying to make rain, trying to bring in clients outside the agency at this point, then?
We're starting
the transition
process.
Right, okay. In fact, we had our first meeting last Monday, and I thought it was so interesting how we were all, you know, the assignment was just bring ideas, just real open-ended, let's start it, let's get the conversation going and see where it goes. And all of Delaine's ideas were organizational, internal. All of mine were sales-driven, and all of Jennifer's were technology.
Interesting. So talk about that. That Gen Y is really influencing companies because of their technology slant, where Gen X had technology, but Gen Y has just been born with it. It's a little bit different. How has that impacted the business? Rick, I'm sure it was probably not as technology savvy when you were a solo practitioner.
When I started at Reinhart College, I paid $89 for a Royal calculator that would do the four basic functions for $90. So that gives you an idea of where technology is gone. What I see in our business, I kind of like to think of what's coming, sort of like the Gretzky quote, you know, you have to go to where the puck is going, and that's where it's been. So that's kind of the way I'm constantly thinking about that. And I think technology, as our industry changes in Washington in the next potential few days, with that, technology is going to be critical to making us be able to prosper in that new environment. So, again, that's a critical thing is the Generation Y folks.
Yeah. Well, and even me, being the next generation from Dad, when I started working with Dad, we used dial-up internet. We were talking about this earlier. We used dial-up internet, and it was the same as our telephone line. So for us to check our email, we had to change cords, download the email. We couldn't receive any phone calls during that time. You know, you get a busy signal in our office. Change cords, then you would respond to all your emails. They'd sit in your outbox so you could plug it back in and send them out. When Jennifer came to work for the business, we had online quoting engines, internet applications, internet pre-screens. Everything was so much more efficient, but we didn't understand it. So we needed Jennifer. She was a key point for Delane and Dad and I to not be intimidated by the technology side of our industry and embrace it.
It sounds, you know, the biggest challenge with multi-generations in any workplace is when there's resistance to each person's perspective. It sounds like you have leveraged it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, also, we're kind of operating solo. You probably sometimes bringing new faces into a business, particularly ones that are so passionate about your success as bringing in your daughters, they look at things a little differently. Did they help you look at your products and your services and expand anything there from their fresh perspective?
Yes, they did. We had a situation on individual health where we really couldn't figure out a way to make it profitable. And at one time, we had 5 individual health clients. And so Amanda came up with the idea of how to make that more efficient and effective. And today, we have close to 700 individual health clients.
Wow. Amanda, what did you bring to the table to make that happen?
Well, that was me just figuring out a way for Dad to keep me. that was in the early years when I was trying to figure out a way to earn some money. I just looked at it as an opportunity. It was something that we weren't doing. The group health side, Dad was already doing and doing very well. This was a product that we weren't doing. And I sat down and just asked Dad, why aren't we doing it? And he said, well, it's because, you know, the way that we quote and the way that we sell, it takes too much time. We can't afford to. And I said, well, what if I figure out a way to streamline that process? It'll give me something to do. Hopefully I'll earn a little money when I'm around here and help out the business. And so really just, again, you know, technology wasn't a factor as much back in those days. So it was more just looking at how do you identify the niche of each insurance company. So when you have an initial consultation with your client, you're already thinking ahead of how do I help that client in the best way that's the most efficient for all of us. And the way that we quoted, the way that we did applications, the way that we did underwriting, I just tried to speed that along as fast as possible.
Right, you have to do a lot more volume in the individual world,
Absolutely.
Would imagine, than the group world. So
Absolutely.
The efficiencies would look completely different in the sales process.
Absolutely.
So, Rick, one of the things you shared with us earlier was this kind of aha moment that you had. So you brought the girls into the business, and then I'm sure in those early days you were pretty much engulfed with assimilating them in. But you are a reflective person, so at one point in time, I know that you mentioned kind of having an aha moment. Can you share a little bit about that?
I would be happy to. At 55, I'm thinking about this next 10 years and maybe retiring at some point. So I sit down, and there are several people, because of industry changes, there are several of my peers that are selling their practices out to, you know, large conglomerates and those kinds of things. And I sat down one day and did some math, and I said, okay, in 10 years, if I retire and I get, you know, X to sell my business, or if, you know, God forbid, if something happened and I'm not here in 10 days, under those two scenarios, what happens to my business, what happens to my children, what happens to my wife? So I sat down over a weekend and went through the math of all those events. And what I found was this, was that, you know, if I sell my business, it could be sold for a multiple, you know, based on different things. And let's just say at that multiple, let's say the value would be X, okay? And I would sell my business for X, and then on that I would pay tax. And then what was left at, say, 5% interest, just as a conservative long-term rate of return, what would that generate in revenue for me if I'm here or for my wife if I'm not here? And then I sit down and said, okay, what does the business produce for me in lifestyle, income, benefits, all those kinds of things? And what is the true value of that? And then I did the math on that and said that I would have to have 4 times X for my business to produce the income or lifestyle that under the other scenario. So I said, okay, 4x minus 1x equals 3x. So 3 times the value is there, and why not figure out a way where the daughters and myself, where we can share that? Instead of, you know, the other option is to sell it to someone you don't trust and know, or sell it to someone who I know, trust, and love. I'll take that option. Mm-hmm. And with that, we all win, and it's all based on trust.
And has that changed anything about the way you're looking at the business now? Are you operating a little bit differently because of that aha?
Absolutely. And what I decided was that it would be better to bring Amanda, Delaney, and Jennifer in on a partnership level basis, where we all have a voice in what's said, and we all, in decision processes going forward, all four have to agree for us to do something. So if one dissents, we don't do it. So I think with that process, we can move together as a team. They'll learn and understand the business more, and someday I can be sitting on the front porch rocking away and watching them have a good time.
I hope they're going to let you retire.
Well, hopefully they will.
We might. And from my perspective, being the second generation, I think that it has changed the way that I look at my day-to-day as well. It's not as task-oriented as it used to be. You know, here's my call list, here's my sales list. Now it's more, yes, I need to do that, but what else can I do for the long-term growth of this business? So it's not only changed maybe Dad's perspective to us, but it's changed our perspective to the business as well.
Yeah, it sounds like you evolved from having a job to being part of the family business to now being a business owner, and it sounds like a evolutionary process.
It is.
Now, do you, Rick, do you share the financial metrics with your daughters? Because they don't have ownership at this point, is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So, I mean, are they involved in that process so they know if you're profitable that month, or how does that work?
One of the things we've talked about just in the last few days, as a matter of fact, is turning over that process to Delaine, our financial CFO personality, and turning that process over to her more, and where all of us would know the financials and have a certain goal amount. And then we know if we reach those goals and surpass them, then there's reward for that.
Right.
It's on that basis.
That's good. So it's performance-driven, just like a normal non-family-owned business.
Exactly. Competition works.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's interesting. In listening to this discussion, it sounds like you initially all got together and it was all very task-oriented. Probably, Rick, you trying to figure out how to assimilate these people in and, you know, first of all, where do you put them and then what do they do? But it sounds like there was some point at which it switched over. Jennifer, once all the daughters were in, that at some point it became less you had employees around you and you had partners in the business. Do you remember that point?
I would guess if I had to put a point to it or a time, it was when I went to a convention. And I was gone for 4 days, and I came back, and there were 2 phone calls to return. Mm. Now, years ago, I'd go to a four-day conference. There might be 50, 60 phone calls to return. So that was one of those moments. And then the other was when I answered the phone, and I said, this is Rick Bailey, Rick Bailey & Company. And they said, well, is Delaine available? And I said, I'm sorry, she's not. Could I help you? And she said, no, I'll just ask Delaine to call me back. So I've had those kind of phone calls for Amanda, for Delaine, and for Jennifer. So, this process is taken, and it's truly like, yeah, this is working.
That's it. And from our perspective, too, it went from, Dad, what would you like me to do today, to a transition of we came in and knew what to do, and now the transition is we're trying to think of new things to do.
What happens with your family dynamic when something's going on personally? I have a younger sister who's 2 years younger than me, and I know it's drama all the time. So what happens, Amanda, if you get angry at Jennifer about something dumb that has nothing to do with Rick Bailey and Company? How does that carry over in the workplace, and how do you guys deal with that as a family?
Well, I tell you what, you can credit Linda Bailey, my mom, for this, because when we were growing up, we weren't allowed to fight. It was not acceptable in our house. We were allowed to talk about our feelings. We were encouraged to talk about our feelings, but we couldn't name call and we couldn't fight. So I think from a very early age, we were taught natural, very respectful ways to approach problems. So that kind of drama that you're talking about, the inner office drama that would be specific to a family, we don't really have that. But I tell you what we do have, and that is the different hats that you have to wear while you're at work. Dad is my father first and then my boss. I'm his daughter first and then his employee. So there's a constant changing of hats. There may be times that I get upset about something and I cry. You know, and I go, Dad, I don't know what to do. Honey, come here. It's okay. Let's sit down and talk about it. Now, do you normally have that kind of relationship with your boss? No. So there's a good and a bad to that, I think. I think that sometimes it's hard to separate the emotion. It's hard to separate our roles as a family with our roles as office personnel. But if you can find a way to make that work, it's very positive.
Do you think it has stemmed from the fact that you have focused on the different generational strengths? So everybody, you said you want them to come in and be passionate about what they do, and now you've really allowed each of them, one to be the teacher, one to be the psychologist working with solving problems and understanding them, and then one to be the financial. Has that helped with the lack of tension, do you think?
I think so, and I think it also just comes down to mutual respect and trust.
Mm.
Jennifer wouldn't come in with a problem and flip out on me. It just wouldn't happen. And likewise, I wouldn't do that with her. So I think that we trust each other to do what we're supposed to do and to do the thing that ultimately benefits the group the most.
Mm-hmm. Any side benefits? Has this had any, given you any competitive advantages?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Is what do your clients or your prospects say about having this? What is their take versus any other group health broker agency?
One of the things we've talked about is that fact of people are selling agencies, so they don't have that continuity of relationship, long-term relationship. And so one of the major strengths we have is that if you're talking to Amanda today at our office, chances are 30 years from now you'll be talking to Amanda at our office. So again, we think that's a great strength, and we're going to emphasize that more to people.
Right. I know business succession is a huge part of my practice, and I know we're always trying to convey to clients how to get a formal plan in place, have the legal documents to supplement that, the assets to be able to structure that succession plan.
Yeah, we're not going anywhere. In fact, my daughter, she's in the third grade this year, but last year when she was in the second grade, they did a little project where they had to say what they wanted to be when they grew up, and they had to draw a picture. And she said she wanted to be an insurance agent. And her teacher went to me and said, in 29 years of teaching second grade, I've never had another student say that she wanted to be an insurance agent when she grew up. So we're not just looking at today or tomorrow. We're looking 30 years down the road. Yeah. So we're not going anywhere.
And something from that is Bailey is the oldest granddaughter, and then Connor is 7, Claire is 6. All three of them have picked out their office at our office space. Now the two younger grandchildren are Allie is 2 and Drew is 1. They're just not old enough to pick their space yet.
Yeah, they've still got time. We give them till at least they're 4 before we ask them to choose an office.
Well, you know, this is a different, this is a more natural, it seems like. When you first started, that wasn't really in the cards. It wasn't the thought, but now it's quite natural, isn't it?
I could never see the day when I would have someone other than me working when I started.
Excellent. You know, you brought up something kind of joking that you wanted to adopt because you might need to add more staff, and it would sound like that. Have you talked about that, concerns now? You have just a great functioning group internally, and many family business owners worry about this. Now, if you start to bring into the mix somebody from outside the family, has that come up?
It does, and I think that we recognize that would be a challenge. You know, which one of these is not like the others? If we bring someone in, even as hard as we would try to treat them like family, it would be a little different, or at least the perception of that might be different. So we realize that struggle, and we are looking to add more people right now. And we've talked about that. Now, the advantage to the different skill sets that we have within our business that we've talked about is we're innately different managers. I'm a sales manager, Jennifer's a technology manager, and Delaine is a service manager. So for those that we hire, instead of this is the team of daughters and this is the team of non-daughters, it's more like the daughters would join a team of others.
Got it. Excellent. You know, Rick, I'm sure there are business owners out there listening and that will listen to this broadcast who have their business and they haven't really thought about having the children, and maybe they're off at college right now or off doing something else. And now maybe this hopefully will stimulate them into thinking, maybe this sounds like a pretty good avenue. Any thoughts or suggestions or advice that you would give them that you've learned along the way?
I actually have three good friends of mine in the employee benefit business. that after they saw that our situation was working with my daughters, we had lunch, we talked about it, and all three of them ended up adding their children to their business. They've been all successful. It's worked worked very, very well. So I guess I would, a few thoughts would be, one is to not have too much, too high level of expectation. Don't try to put a square peg in a round hole. Those kinds of things. If you let it happen naturally, if it's something that they want to do and enjoy doing, everything else works.
Rick, how do you recommend or broaching that conversation with a son or daughter if you think that that might be a possibility, again, to some of our listeners out there?
Well, in the case of Delaine and Amanda, I guess really both of them came to me and we were talking and I said, well, why don't we do this? And then with Jennifer, she had that point where she could either go in and be a teacher or, you know, go in and work with us. And so I tried to make it as comfortable as I could. So either decision was a right decision. And I would feel proud of them either way they went. Linda and I both encouraged our daughters to get a college degree. And the thought was that way you have more options available. And
I would agree. The open door policy is key because as a child, you know, no matter how old you are, whether you're 6 or 36, there's a certain level of independence that you want to have from your parents. So the more something's forced upon you as a child, I think the more it's ill-received. So if there's an open door policy and say, hey, there's a position for you here if you'd like it, I think that it's much more encouraging to the child than when it's forced upon them and they resist that maybe a little bit.
How do, Rick, how do your son-in-laws feel about, you know, having so much in this family business? Do you see any of them getting involved or kind of part of the family but not direct blood, basically?
We've actually talked about that. And we do have space underneath our office condo for five offices.
In the basement? That's where you'll put the son-in-laws?
In the dungeon.
Well, I may actually go down there, too. So. but we have talked about that. And they're, if they'd like to, they're welcome.
Well, and interestingly enough, you know, they have different skill sets, too. So we can use them.
Excellent. And Amanda, how about you in terms of, you know, your perspective? If I'm a in college right now or I'm working at XYZ company and I see the family business and maybe it hasn't been offered to me or maybe the topic has come up and gone away at Thanksgiving dinner, what are your thoughts in terms of suggestions for someone in your generation looking at the business?
I think you do some soul searching and you see what are strengths that I could bring to this business. And you approach it from a very mechanical point of view, not, hey, daddy, I need a job, but, hey, dad, look what I could do. These are the skill sets that I have. These are the education or the background that I have. Here's how I can improve your business. I think that would be a better way to approach it than just looking for a handout. You know, there's an old joke about a son that joins the father's business. In this case, we'll use daughter since it's more applicable. But the daughter graduates from college, and the dad says, you know, welcome to the business. This is our business now. What part of the business would you like to work in? Manufacturing, accounting, service, sales? And the daughter says, no, dad, I'd just like you to buy me out. And I think that from the child perspective, we have to work. You know, I don't know what it's like to build a business from scratch. Thankfully, I didn't have to. That groundwork was done for me. But I know what it's like to maintain a business, and that's my job in this multi-generational business.
How do you guys hold each other accountable? I mean, again, you're dealing with the family dynamic. Let's say, don't know her, but Delaine's not pulling her weight this month.
Oh, that would never happen.
Yeah. I agree.
If you knew Delaine, that's really funny.
She's going to call me after the show. But yeah. So let's say she's not pulling her weight. How are you guys putting, again, in these metrics to be able to say, hey, you're doing what you need to be doing or you're not? Or how would a conversation like that go down in the business environment?
One of the things we started doing recently is we said, okay, let's analyze the sales process. Let's analyze the service process. Okay, how, you know, is that profitable? How do we make it more profitable? So what we're starting to do, each of us, is look at each individual action. And does that make sense the way we do it? Do we need to redesign it? What we need to do? So those are the things we're doing there. One of the things I've always tried to make the spirit of our company is to allow them to take chances and fail. Failure is not a problem with me. You know, I fail quite often. It's what's most important is what you do when you get up. And so we've created that environment where it's okay to take a chance. It's okay to try something. If you fail, that's okay. Let's try again. And so that, I think that environment has made it to where we're not, you know, are you there at 8 o'clock in the morning? Are you there at 6 o'clock at night? I'm more involved with, did we get accomplished what we wanted to accomplish? And have you enjoyed your life today? And have your children enjoyed their life today? If we've done those things, nothing else matters.
It's the Bailey Utopia. Ah.
Well, it is the happy place, yeah.
It sounds like you brought not just the values of your family, but the style in which your family operated to the business. Is that accurate? That's what
absolutely.
I'm hearing.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, we used to joke growing up that our family was kind of like the Cleavers. You know, Dad comes in from work with his briefcase, and Mom says, oh, hi, honey, how was your day? Oh, it was great, honey, how was yours? Kiss, kiss, hug, hug. Oh, let's sit and watch a movie with the kids. And it sounds so 50s television, but it's true. That's the life that we grew up with. And those foundations that were given to us by our parents, we do carry that on, and we would carry it on in any business. I would be the same person working for anyone as I am working for my dad. I just try to use the gifts that were given to me to help him back.
On the personal note, Linda and I are childhood sweethearts. We met at 14, and I hadn't let her go since.
Wow.
That's good.
You know, I want to segue in a couple minutes into some topics around the, because you happen to be sitting in an agency that is the forefront of the news these days. So I'm sure that some of our listeners will want to hear your thoughts on the healthcare. But before we do that, we have a kind of a tradition that we have established in the company show to offer three tips to our listeners so that they can kind of have a little resource to go to. So I'd love to hear, you've shared so much wisdom. If you had three takeaway tips that people could go back to each time and could share those with us, that would be great.
Okay, our first tip would be that both generations equally contribute to the business for a long period of time. For the first generation, don't say, oh, well, I've got the children now that can work the business. I'm going to go hit the golf course. And for the second generation, don't say, well, you know, Dad will take care of that. Dad will figure out a way for us to make more money and to get more clients. So I'll just show up when I can and see what I can make happen.
The second tip would be that the relationship between the family business owner and the children must grow, change, and mature. The father to the child is an unequal relationship that matures into a relationship of equals. The business relationship must mature in the same way to a relationship of equals. One of my favorite sayings is, it's a great moment when the teacher becomes the student and the student becomes the teacher, and that's, we've had those moments.
And I guess our third tip would be to use the strengths of each generation to look at what each person can contribute to the business. You know, if you read an old comic book and you put together a superhero team, all those individual superheroes had different powers. If they had had the same power, would they have been as effective? No. So find out what your superpower is and use that to contribute to the business.
Excellent. Sounds like a great point.
Great.
So what is going on? What do you see is going to go on for health insurance? I know none of us have a crystal ball, but you do a lot of individual health, and that's certainly where this is going to be the biggest impact.
We do, and I try to look and see what might happen in the future and try to be there when it does happen. But I'm going to write an article for the paper next week, and one of the things, the title of it will be Political Solutions, Not Talking Points. This problem is so complex that if I sit down and wrote you everything that I need to tell you, it's probably 5 pages long. By the time you got through it, you really wouldn't, no one can understand it. So the practical solutions here in Georgia, one would be to have a high-risk health pool. There are people now in Georgia that are uninsurable because of health issues. That diabetes is one. Heart stents is another. There are several of those, cancer issues. They're not insurable currently. That's wrong. We're one of 4 states in the country where that exists. That shouldn't be. There is a law currently in Georgia where we do have a high-risk health pool. It's just not currently funded, okay? There's something going before the state legislature now that would be a plan sort of like the Idaho plan that's been very successful without going into all the details of that. But there is a way for the private market to make this work. The second item would be the conversion, conversion of the plan. When you finish your coverage with an employer, this is happening a lot every day out there, and you've either exhausted the COBRA benefits or you've exhausted the state continuation, either one of those, there's a conversion that's available by law in Georgia. The problem is it is so expensive that people can't afford it. So that should be reconfigured and repriced in such a way that it's spread over the entire market, not over that portion that's a high-risk market. The other thing is Georgia has a premium tax on health insurance. Most people don't know it. It's 3.25%. State gets 2.25% of that. Counties and cities split the other one. It does not go to health-related things. It goes to general revenue. They do with it what they want. Georgia has the second highest premium tax in the country. The last thing, you hear a lot of things about selling health plans across state lines as a way to bring up competition. The practical way to do this without spending a whole lot of money would be to have an electronic bidding process where you would have either one master application or either electronic way of taking the application and information and then putting it into each company's individual application, hitting a button, and then letting each company truly bid on that health of that person and offers, let those offers come back electronically. That would be a true competitive environment. So just a few things
that'd
to think
be
about.
Easier for the consumer too. It'd be a heck of a lot quicker and simpler.
Absolutely.
And you make sure you're getting the best deal available for you and your particular conditions.
Exactly.
So that article will be in, where would the listeners be able to find that?
We're going to submit it to all the papers. We'll submit it to the AJC, the local papers in the around Metro Atlanta. We'll see who publishes it.
Dad has a friend on the media committee. Yeah.
Amanda, Delaney, and Jennifer.
Yeah. Amanda, has this debate brought in more calls? Are you getting a lot of worried people calling up, worried about their existing health care, asking you what it's going to mean? What's that happened to the consumer?
Yeah, a lot of people asking questions. A lot of people hear in the news, oh, well, this passed here, or they're going to pass this, and they don't understand what that means or the impact that it's going to have on them personally. What I see, too, among, you know, I'm 35, and what I see among my peers is for the first time people are talking about health insurance. They're interested in it. They have questions about it. You know, I may go to a restaurant with a group of friends, and they're asking me, what's going on with health care? You know, can you help me find a better deal on my health insurance? That's never been a very interesting topic of dinner conversation before. So I think that whenever you have people interested in something, when you open the dialogue, there's bound to be good things that come out of that.
Interesting. So another generational difference that's kind of maybe helping to have the mix in the business, because I'm sure, Rick, years ago, to her point, the younger generation wasn't ever asking those questions.
Well, in my generation, nothing's going to happen to us, right? You know, the mm-hmm. younger you are, the less you think the worst-case scenario. So, no, insurance wasn't a key topic of conversation among my peers, but it is gradually becoming more and more.
You know, I will say that change has to occur in healthcare. The status quo will not work. By 2050, it will consume 100% of our GDP. So we can't continue. But I think practical solutions, step by step, I think we can make some positive changes. I have a lot of ideas, I think, creatively, that we could make this work in a competitive environment, if given the chance.
Have you had to try to think of how would it change your agency business?
Absolutely. I think about that daily. We've talked about many times is I've said, regardless of what happens, if you provide value to the system, there is a place for you and there's a compensation for you. Now, I don't know if the insurance company will pay us. I don't know if the client will pay us. I don't know if the government will pay us. But if we provide value, there is a place for us.
Have you seen a lot more influx of individual cases with all the layoffs and unemployment here in Georgia? And certainly also to speak to the Medicare supplements with a lot of the boomers hitting retirement?
One of the things that we've seen is the stimulus package did do some good. It's paying 65% of the health care premiums for those people that are laid off for a period of time. So we've seen that to really help and be a safety net for people. The concern I have is that we're running out of that time. And somewhere in late fall, those first people are going to be coming off of that. At that point, it's going to be a very difficult situation out there. Individual health insurance will be very important, and we need to have mechanisms to handle those people who have insurability problems. That's why something needs to get done in the legislature this year.
Well, you know, I have learned a lot. It's a wonderful lesson to hear what happens when you slowly and evolve into from a sole proprietor into really what is a thriving family business. And Amanda, it looks like you're already planning the next generation in there with your daughter and the grandchildren. So it's been a great education for myself as well.
Sounds like we all would like invitations to the Bailey Family Christmas.
Absolutely. You have one.
Yeah, pull up a chair.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you guys for being with us today.
Thank you, Beth, so much.
Thank you.
And let me tell you, listeners, if you would like to, a couple of things. First of all, Rick and Amanda, if you can tell folks how they could reach you, phone number and website address.
Yes, please visit our website at www.rickbaileycompany.com. That's RickBaileyCompany.com. You can call us at 770-569-9333.
And if anybody would like to come back and at any point in time listen, and the podcast from today will be available for download on our site, and you can always find that at familybusinessradio.businessradiox.com. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you next week.